A public authority is a public corporation created by act of the state legislature. It's designed like a business corporation, which is designed to do things for profit. If I form Bob's Donuts, I want to sell the donuts and make money doing it, right? But a public benefit corporation is a corporation formed by government to do a public purpose. The MTA is one of these examples. Governor Rockefeller created this corporation in 1969 to run transit systems in downstate New York. Other examples of public benefit corporations, the first one that was created in 1921 is the Port Authority. It operates the Port of New York and New Jersey. It was the first public authority created. And remember, these are just publicly created, legislatively chartered corporations for a public purpose. The first one was in 1921. That was the Port Authority. It was designed after the Port of London Authority, which was highly successful in cleaning up the Port of London. Back in 1921, the Port of New York needed some help. It was decrepit, and it was a busy port in the country. Matter of fact, next week is the 100th anniversary of the Titanic going down, right? 100 years ago, April 15th, I believe it was, right? 14th, 15th, right? Did it in the middle of the night. So. But it was headed for the Port of New York. The Titanic was going at breakneck speed. One of the reasons was they wanted to get in early to the Port of New York because ships would queue up in line there because it was so busy and not well run. It was one of the many reasons why it was going so fast. Well, in 1921, they formed this public corporation, same way they did in 1969 for the trains and the buses with MTA. They formed it to create the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. What it did was it administers all the ports. It finances them. It takes in monies from fees. That's where authorities get their money. If you drive the New York State Thruway, you pay a toll. The Thruway Authority gets its money from the tolls. Unlike other areas of government, they don't sell things. They don't tax you. They pay a user's fee. That's where all these authorities get their money. The MTA, you ride the subway, you ride Long Island Railroad, you pay a fee. Frequently, they're also subsidized with tax money. Because few governmental entities, including corporations, can break even. Okay? The word authority comes out of that London authority, the Port of London Authority, because when Parliament wrote the law to create the corporation, every other word in the statute was, they shall have the authority to do this. And it was nicknamed an authority out of that. What these public corporations do is very simple. They operate, build, and finance things. Only those three things. They operate something for the public benefit. It's a public benefit corporation. That's how it's defined in the law. They'll operate the train system. They'll finance things. What'll they do? If you need to build a new railroad line because the old one is breaking down, they'll borrow the money, float bonds, they'll sell bonds to people across the country to pay for it, so they'll finance the construction of it. Okay? So they operate, build, and finance. Those are the three things that they do. Okay. Now, when you're talking about a public authority, This is not a new concept, even though the first one was created in 1921, the Port Authority. In the 1930s, there was an explosion of these things. You had a depression. People were out of work. And the government decided to use these things to be able to start employing people to build infrastructure projects. The king of them was a guy by the name of Robert Moses. At one point in time, in the mid-1930s, and incidentally, he ran for governor in 1934, I think, got the least number of votes in the history of New York State running for governor. Because he was the head of all these public authorities, and he ticked everybody off. Because it's not a job that is incumbent to be able to make people act. Okay? Public authorities build things. They kind of run over people and people were happy. But at one point in the 1930s, he was the head. Incidentally, the governor he lost to appointed him as the head of all these public authorities. Okay? And he turned around. Lehman was his name. Ever hear of Lehman's Brothers? The investment firm that just went under? He was the guy that helped start it. Governor of New York. His claim to fame was he was lieutenant governor to Franklin Roosevelt. And Roosevelt went on to president, he went on to governor. Robert Moses was the head of 33 public authorities. He built everything you can think of in downstate New York. Any of the parkways in Long Island, he built them. Grand Central Parkway, built it. Jones Beach, he built it. All of these things were built by public authorities. Frog's Neck Bridge, all the major infrastructure in New York City was built by public authorities in the 1930s. It was an explosion of these things. Okay? There are less so today. Some of the more prominent ones, of course, are the Thruway Authority. There was a guy, Abbott Lowe Moffitt, who was from New York City, decided he wanted to have a superhighway all across New York State. And he passed a law. He was the finance chair, the Ways and Means chair in the Assembly. He passed a law to create an authority, the Thruway Authority. And the Thruway was built all the way from New York City to Buffalo. Okay, one of the largest roads at the time in the United States. That was done by a public corporation. They bought the land, they financed it, and they paid it off through the tolls that they collected. That's what a public benefit corporation does. Now, about 10 years ago, actually even more than that, 14 years ago, I created a public authority in the city of Schenectady, for Schenectady County, where I was the chairman of the county legislature. Called the Schenectady Metroplex. We did it. We created that entity to do economic development. Because Schenectady had a high crime rate, it was falling on hard times. They turned around and would buy buildings, create jobs, bring people in there. Now Schenectady is a much nicer city, still got problems. But that public authority helped to clean up virtually the downtown Schenectady. You can use public authorities, public benefit corporations, to do a lot of things. One of its models, one of its predecessors, goes all the way back to the early 1800s when the Erie Canal was built in New York State. The New York State government actually chartered a private corporation to help build it. That was one of the models for the early public authorities. Okay. Any questions? They are a wonderful entity, but they can be abused. They're very controversial. Nobody loves the FDA. Every year they say, I love the FDA. But the work they do can be substantial, and that's one of the reasons they do it. Okay. Any questions, anybody? Let's rip through a quick review of corporations, and then we'll get you out of here. Okay? Time out. 6:30. Okie dokie.
Okay. What is a corporation? Corporation is a person under the law. In 1819, the Supreme Court of the United States defined it as that. The Supreme Court of the United States said that it's an artificial being that is invisible, untouchable, and exists only in theory. But it is a person under the law. As we discussed before, it came out of Roman law. The very word corporation comes from the word corpus, meaning body, meaning it's an artificial person for the purpose of conducting business operations. It's recognized with legal rights. It can own property. It can pay taxes. It exists for an indefinite period. It can go on perpetually. It can sue and be sued. It's a creature of statute. You can form a corporation. Remember, earlier corporations were enacted the state legislature. Before that, they were given to you, the power was given to you by the king. Today, the general incorporation laws, a state statute says, if you do certain activities, you can incorporate. It's a roadmap. Okay? They are a creature of statute. It has a separate identity under the law. Unlike a partnership, or sole proprietorship, where the partners or the sole proprietor is the person who is running and controlling it, a corporation is a separate person under the law. It has its own identity. So if you change presidents, if you change heads of board of directors, that corporation still goes down. It's not related to the people who are running it. When Jack Welch left GE, it still remained being GE. May have gone in a different direction, but it's still the same company. Okay? Even when the original creators die, Henry Ford is long dead. But the Ford Motor Company still exists. Because Ford Motor Company has a perpetual existence. Okay? Okay. It has limited liability. That's a critical concept. Why? Because without that limited liability, you can't raise the money. You form a corporation, one of the biggest reasons you form one, is to raise capital. It's a way to get money into your business through selling shares of the business, shares of stock. When you have a partnership, you can't do that. When you have a sole proprietorship, you can't do that. Okay? But with a corporation, you can. That limited liability concept says, you can take a risk on me because it's only the amount of money you use to buy those shares that you're going to be in the game for. And if my business doesn't go the way I wanted it to, you're not going to lose everything you have. Whereas if you're a partner with me and my business goes south, they can take your house, your car, everything, because there is no limitation on liability. Okay? This is a wonderful concept. A corporation acts through its agents and employees. It can't act for itself because it's artificial. It acts through its agents and employees. The board of directors appoints the officers appoint the other employees and the agents. When a corporation owns property, it does so in its own name. When you own partnership property, you do it in your name. Even though it's partnership property, right? But you're the one that has to sign for it. When you own property as a corporation, it's not the property of the board of directors or even of the shareholders. It's the property of the corporation. Now, when the corporation gets dissolved, all that property can go to the shareholders. But at the end of the day, The property is still the property of the corporation. Okay. How do you govern a corporation? As we said, it must act through its agents and employees. What is the level of corporate administration? First, who's on top of the food chain? We have a nice little chart. You can download this. I know you're excited. Okay? At the top of the food chain, who was the number one people in a corporation? For those of you who sit up front, you get to read this. It's the shareholders. Because they have the power of the vote. Just like all of us are in control of our country or state because we can vote our leaders in and out. Shareholders are at the top of the food chain. You good? Shareholders get to vote for the board of directors. The board of directors are the next people on the food chain. They're the ones who guide the direction of the corporation. Shareholders vote for who these board of directors are, and then the board of directors set the policy in broad sweeping terms of the corporation. But the most important role the board of directors have is they hire the officers. The board of directors hire the officers. They also make major policy decisions like, should we issue more stock? Should we create a new division? Big ticket items go to the board. But day-to-day operations of the corporation, who you fire, who you hire, what you're doing, are all done by the officers. They're hired by the board of directors, and the officers are the third link in the food chain here. The officers include people like the chief executive officer, the president, frequently, not always, the same person. The president is the de facto head of the corporation. Or if you have a chief executive officer and the president, he's usually the CEO. Okay? That's the head banana. That's the person who turns around and makes all of the major hiring and firing decisions. It is the person who is responsible when the buck stops for the running of the corporation on a day-to-day basis. That president or CEO is the one who sets the small-level policies of the corporation. Okay? They sign the contracts. They negotiate the deals. They prepare the agenda items for the board of directors. A lot of people think the officers actually have more power than the board of directors because the board of directors come in once a month for a meeting, but their whole agenda that they consider is prepared for them by the officers. They set the table for it. So if you prepare the entire agenda, guess what? Guys who fly in and out, they're probably going to follow what you do. Okay? So the real power, that a lot of people think, are with the officers. The officers then will turn around and hire the agents and employees. So if you turn around and are behind the counter at McDonald's, you're not the person who's the president of the corporation usually, but you might be hired by one of his assistants. Now, vice presidents can also be officers. Vice presidents tend to be the heads of units, bureaus or divisions within a corporation. So you can have a vice president for consumer affairs. That person is usually the person who you call up on the phone if you got the product and it broke and you didn't like it. Okay? When your cell phone service isn't working, you try and get a natural person to talk to. Good luck if you can. But that person, you may want to go all the way up the food chain, is the vice president of consumer affairs, and that's the person who is in charge of making everybody happy. Okay? Sometimes the big multinational corporations, they'll have a vice president for a country, vice president for Asian affairs or something. And that person will be in charge of that geographical unit. Okay? Okay. The shareholders vote at an election date that's set up usually first in the Articles of Incorporation, and then in the bylaws. One of the first things you do with a corporation is that the board of directors will enact a set of bylaws. Articles of Incorporation are very brief documents. They set forth the name of the organization, corporation, Bob's Donuts. They set forth the purpose of it, to make money by baking donuts. They set forth where the corporation is going to be located, Albany, New York. They'll turn around in the Articles of Incorporation and say, how many directors? Well, I know five neighbors, they're my friends, family, I got my wife. We'll throw in there seven boards of directors. Make Ira Milstein happy. He likes seven. Okay? That's all in the Articles of Incorporation. But that's all there is. The bylaws set forth a lot of specifics. They'll say when the annual shareholder meeting is. They'll say how proxy voting is distributed. They'll say how stock is distributed. They will fill in all the gaps that's not there. Okay? If you want to make a comparison between government and corporations, the Articles of Incorporation are like the Constitution, and the bylaws are like the statutes. Okay? Shareholders, they have the right to control the corporation, as we said, because they have the power of the vote. Now remember, that power to vote is the same as when you go to vote for your congressman. When you vote for your congressman, that doesn't give you the right to stand in Congress and debate a bill. You get to pick the person who does that. Same way with a shareholder. So a shareholder doesn't have the right to fire an employee, but they have the right to pick and vote for the board of directors. And the number of votes you get is based on the number of shares you have. So if you own 51% of the corporation, guess what? You are in control. Okay? You have more votes than anybody else. It is not a one-man, one-vote scenario. It's a one-share, one-vote scenario. The guy with the biggest purse wins. Okay. You need to have a quorum in order to hold that election. The bylaws will specify that. Usually these elections are held annually, and they are set forth in the bylaws. Okay? Ownership in a corporation is evidenced by a stock certificate. But guess what? What happens if you don't have that stock certificate? Does that mean you're no longer an owner of the corporation? What do you think? Is it like a bearer instrument? You said you didn't think so? Is that what you said?
No, I said you.
No, I said you didn't think so?
Sorry?
You said you didn't think so?
He said he didn't think so.
He was right. A stock certificate is only evidence of your ownership. Okay? What happens is you have to be a registered owner. I try to help. A stock certificate is merely evidence of your ownership. You are recorded by the secretary of the corporation as an owner. They have to have a record of who owns the shares. Because what happens if your house burns down? All of a sudden, you know, you're the lead owner in GE, and your house burns down, GE goes out of business? I mean, you can't do that. Okay? So they record who is the owner. Okay? It's evidence of it. If they didn't record it right, you have the certificate, it's evidence that you did. Okay? Now, they have an annual shareholders meeting. At that time, they'll vote on big things. Like a change of the bylaws are sometimes given out to the shareholders to decide. Big items like that. Big issues. The vote for the board of directors at that annual meeting. Do you think on big companies like a GE or like, you know, Microsoft, when they hold their annual meeting, that everybody goes to the annual shareholder meeting? Now, I suspect that Bill Gates is going to go to the Microsoft shareholder meeting, seeing that he owns the vast majority of the stock. But if I have two shares of Microsoft stock, which is probably probably the amount that I own.
If I have that, I don't think I'm going to fly out to Seattle to go hobnob with the beautiful people and go to shareholders meeting to vote my two shares out of the billions that they have. What do I do? They send me a proxy in the mail. I can turn around and fill out a written form on how I wish to have my shares voted. That I really like this new change that they're doing. That I want to vote for John Smith for board of directors. That I want to re-elect Bill Gates as the head of the corporation. Okay? Those things I can turn around and vote for. But I can do it through the mail. All I have to do is fill out that proxy vote. Okay?
Can you do it online these days?
No. Generally not. That is because there's securities laws that require a verification on it, and there is no verification that they can do online that allows a legal recognition of that.
What do they do in the mail?
Sorry?
What do they do for the mail?
You generally have to have the witness to notarize, depending on what the bylaws say. Okay. Now, can you fax it there? Probably yes. Okay?
You could probably fax it because many states, and again, this is state law,
many states recognize a facsimile document or email, you know, scan and email document. But can you fill it out online? Generally not, because that's not recognized, at least under New York state law, as to how that operates. Okay?
So the electronic voting has not come yet to corporate America. Maybe when you are running things, they might. Okay. Cumulative voting. You get the number of votes of the number of shares, generally. There are exceptions to that, but by and large, most states provide that you don't have a one-man, one-vote rule. You have a one-share, one-vote rule. Okay? Okay. Now, small shareholders. Like I say, I have two shares of Microsoft stock. Have it in my deferred compensation account someplace. Okay. They don't really tell you what share you got. Just guessing. But you have that small amount, and I don't like the way Microsoft is going. And my two shares are not going to make a real big difference in the board of the board of directors, are they? Okay? There is a possibility, if you don't like the way that the corporation is going and you think that it's being wasted, because remember, those officers and directors have a fiduciary duty to maximize my profit. As a shareholder, I have the right to get my profit maximized. That's one of the duties they have to me. And if I don't think they're doing that, I can actually sue them in a shareholder derivative action. I'm saying you are wasting my investment. Now, there is something known as the business judgment rule. If they are taking those risks because it's in the best interest of the business that they're operating, and that, my friends, is really in the eye of the beholder, okay? Then the shareholder derivative action will not succeed. Basically, the only time they do, shareholder derivative actions were big in the 1970s. They have not been so big since then. Because most times the board of directors is smart enough to make up an excuse one way or the other on why they are justifiably doing something. And that's all they have to do under the business judgment rule, saying, I'm trying to help the business. Okay? The only place where that doesn't work is if there is fraud and mismanagement. The most recent case was before Blue Cross Blue Shield went and became a not-for-profit when they were wasting money and there was a successful action. Okay. What are the elements of a corporation? It's legally constituted, remember, by statute. One, it can exist, doesn't have to, but can exist perpetually. What does that mean? I can form a corporation for 30 years. I can do it for 10 years. I can do it for a year. But it's unlikely that you're going to do that. Because one of the reasons why you form the corporation is to get investment in, right? And if I'm forming it for a very short time, they know after that short time, the corporation is going to go away. It's going to limit your opportunities for investment. People want stability. And if you are around for a long time, you're going to be stable. So perpetually is the most frequent designation on how long a corporation lasts. Okay? Again, a corporation can sue and be sued. That's part of the fact that it acts through its agents and employees. It can acquire and hold property in its own name. And it can make laws, these are bylaws, that regulate its own behavior. I can turn around and I can have, under New York State law, a bylaw that says we're only going to hire people named Bob. I'm going to have to include ladies in that. We have to go by Bobby or Vernon. But I can turn around and say we're only going to hire Bob's and Bob's Donuts. That's a rule. How can I do that? It's because we're authorized to make those bylaws, and as long as I'm not doing it for an illegal reason, I'm not discriminating against anybody, okay, because I'm allowing women who are bobbies to come in, okay, as long as I'm allowed to do that, I can turn around and put that in the bylaws. I can turn around and say we're only going to hire people in our corporation that really know how to bake good donuts. Okay? Those can all be put in the bylaws. Okay. Articles of incorporation. What goes in them? First and foremost is the corporate purpose. Corporate purposes for business corporations are pretty broad. Basically, it's just got to be something, an enterprise you're taking to make money that's legal. That's all it is. You can basically do anything you want as long as it's legal and form a corporation to do it. So if you want to form a corporation for the purposes of advancing mouth claiming, hoping that you'll somehow make money off of that, you can do it. Doesn't matter, as long as it's a legal enterprise. I can't form a corporation for the purposes of murdering people. Murder Incorporated may have been a catchphrase, but guess what? You can't legally do it. Okay? So as long as it's a legal purpose, you can basically do it. Most of them are formed for purposes of operating a business for profit. Name of the corporation. The articles of incorporation designate a name. Now, what happens if I'm thinking about forming a corporation and I'm desperate to call it Bob's Donuts and I want to make sure there's no other Bob's Donuts out there, and I look online in the Secretary of State's office and say, no other fool has used that name, so we're good to go on that, but I want to make sure that my next door neighbor, Bob, doesn't form Bob's Donuts. Because I know he likes donuts and I know he might do it. So what do? I can go to the Secretary of State's office and reserve that name. That was done quite frequently during the internet period. A lot of people reserved names of companies based on websites they wanted to register. They actually incorporated under that name of the website that they wanted to register with Network Solutions or one of the other internet name providers out there. So you could actually, for a fee, reserve a name for a period of time. It doesn't go for very long. Okay? It's basically a month or two, can be renewed, but you can reserve that name. Once you file that articles of incorporation, the name of the corporation is right on top of it. It's the first thing you put in there, and that makes sense. Okay? Okay. Got to tell how long it is. If it's perpetual, you say the corporation's perpetual. The articles of incorporation also say the number of shares that can be issued. Now, Articles of incorporation are not carved in stone. They can be amended. So let's say you say, I'm going to issue 1,000 shares, my articles of incorporation. And suddenly your idea, whatever it is, takes off swimmingly, and everybody wants to buy your stock. I could turn around and amend the articles of incorporation, usually put that out to the shareholders to be able to vote on that, not just the board of directors. And I can amend it to now we're going to issue 100,000 shares of stock. Now, the people who bought stock before, under that 1,000, can't have their shares diminished. So if they own 10%, they get 10% of the 100,000. Okay? You have to keep it percentage-wise. Or you have to buy it back from them, which the corporation could, in order to get that back and retrieve it. But you can't diminish somebody's shares just by issuing more. Okay? You got to give on the articles of incorporation the name and address of the incorporators and the registered office. Where are we going to locate? Okay? And frequently, New York State, you have to, you tell how many board of directors are on there. 7, right? Okay. Doesn't have to be 7. You could have 700 if you want, but okay. Ultra vires. That means beyond the scope. If I am operating beyond the scope, I'm a director of a corporation. I fly in every month for my meeting at Bob Stoglitz. Bob Stoglitz is doing well. As a result of that, I only have to come every month to pick up my check. Remember, directors generally are paid, and paid quite handsomely. Okay? Just for a meeting. They only meet usually once a month. The articles of incorporation and the bylaws will say how often they meet. Okay? Usually it's just in the bylaws, but sometimes the articles of incorporation say that too. I come in there and I start doing very strange things. I'm operating beyond the scope of what a director would do. Instead of coming in and merely casting my votes, I start turning around saying, you know, I think members of the board of directors, that I should be able to eat donuts anytime I want. I should not have to pay for them. I should be able to go in and take employees to do my personal business. I should do anything that I feel like because I'm on the board of directors. If I do those types of activities, suddenly I start showing up at Bob's Donut Shops. And I grab the people behind the counter and I say, you know, my lawn needs cutting. I need you to change the oil in my car. And I ask them to do all these things and they do them because they're afraid of me because I'm on the board of directors. That is ultra vires activity. And I can be disciplined. I can be thrown off the board by the shareholders for that, for cause. I can turn around and be sued for it. In one of those shareholder derivative actions. Okay? Rare, but it does happen. Okay. Now, you can form a corporation which is neither a public corporation, like public authority, or a business corporation. You can form a corporation which is a not-for-profit corporation. Under New York State law, there are not-for-profit corporations. There's a not-for-profit corporation law where if you do certain public purposes like education, like charitable work, you can form that corporation for the purpose of performing that and not have to make a profit. Matter of fact, if you file a form with the IRS, you can actually accept money as a charity and have people get a tax deduction for doing some of these things. Okay? If you do that, if you are a charity and accept contributions as under 501c3 of the tax code, federal tax code, then you also have to register with the Attorney General of the State of New York under his Charities Bureau. Okay? Not-for-profit corporations don't pay taxes because no corporate taxes on a not-for-profit. Why? Because they make no income. Okay? Now, not-for-profits can be enormous corporations. They can be multi-billion-dollar corporations. Corporations like United Way have billions of dollars and thousands of employees that pass through them. But they don't pay a dime worth of taxes because society says you're doing charitable public work, and as a result of that, we're not going to charge you for that. What you take in is what you spend. Okay? They also enjoy special protections in bankruptcy. Hopefully they don't have to get there. Okay. You also have a special type of business corporation known as a closely held or a closed corporation. If I only want to have family members, or as we said before, people named Bob, buy my shares at Bob's Donuts, that can be considered a closed corporation. Because I'm not offering the stock out to the general public. It's a selective stock ownership. Very many small companies start out this way. Some big companies still start and continue this way. We've talked before about the Golub Corporation, which owns Price Chopper. The Golub family and their employees are the only ones who own their stock. They are a closely held corporation, one of the largest incidentally in the United States. But it's right here in town. Okay. Now, if you are a closely held corporation, you don't have to be regulated in your stock sales by the SEC. That's only if it's publicly traded. So if you don't trade your stock, the SEC and all the regulations under federal law don't apply to you. But in return for that, you have to register with the state and discuss through financial disclosure documents that you are not publicly trading it. You have to list through financial disclosure who your shareholders are to let them know that you're not publicly trading. Okay? There's also something known for individuals who want to have corporate limited liability, something known as a subchapter S corporation. This is not done very much anymore. It was big in the 1980s. What this allows you to do is form a corporation, but be taxed as an individual. Corporations pay taxes twice, because they pay corporation taxes, because remember, they're a person under the law. But they also pay taxes on all the revenues that the individual people have. So you pay twice on that. Because the corporation pays it, so do all its employees. Okay? So do all its shareholders. So you're paying twice on that. Under subchapter S, you don't do that. Everything is taxed as if you're a sole proprietorship. Now, why doesn't that happen much anymore? Because there's a lot of fees and expenses to having a corporation. Most single people don't form them anymore. They form limited liability companies, which we will talk about later. Okay? As we said before, a professional corporation is a corporation which is established by a profession, albeit doctors, lawyers, engineers, somebody like that, to practice it. Okay. What happens when I file the articles of incorporation and there's a mistake in it? It's incorrect and invalid under the law. I don't put the number of board of directors in it. I don't put where the address is in it. I don't put the name of the corporation. Okay? But I'm still operating as Bob's Donuts, Inc. I'm out there operating as a corporation. What happens there? Under the law, they will give me the status of what is known as a de facto corporation. It's kind of like when an agent goes out and has apparent authority. I'm operating like a corporation. I act like a corporation. I turn around and take the behavior of a corporation, but my articles were legally invalid. Under the law, I can be treated like a corporation in all purposes as a result of that. Okay? And I can be allowed to correct the articles to get it back in line. Okay? As we said before, under a corporate purpose, basically any legal purpose that you do, it can be used to run a business, it can be used to acquire another corporation. Some corporations just own other corporations. They don't do, they're called holding corporations. They don't do any activities themselves. They're ownership shells. But that's legal. Okay? The Secretary of State is where you file your articles of incorporation. They are, it's an individual person that is appointed by the governor. They are a ministerial entity. What does that mean? They don't fill out your forms for you. They just accept them for filing. Now, they will review if there's something glaring on there and give it back to you. But they won't tell you how to correct it. They only do a ministerial job. They accept it for filing. And under New York State law, they also serve another purpose. If you create a corporation, under New York State law, the Secretary of State is your agent for service of process. So if I don't know where to find Bob's Donuts in order to sue them, I can actually sue Bob's Donuts by delivering a copy of my complaint to the Secretary of State. And that Secretary of State, because they have all the documents on me, turn around and serve me. So they can act as an agent for service of process. In many other states, you just designate somebody. In New York State, they are the designated agent. Okay. Now, the people go around and form the corporation before the articles of incorporation are filed. They're called promoters. They have a fiduciary duty to the corporation even before it exists, because their whole purpose is to do that. They can be sued if they violate that duty, even though the corporation isn't in existence yet. Okay? It's a risky proposition, but they're often paid handsomely for that, usually in stock. Okay. Once you form the corporation, I run over and file my articles of incorporation. I have to have an initial meeting. What happens at that initial meeting? The board of directors get elected, and then they adopt bylaws. They elect the corporate officers, usually select them. Okay? Your board of directors gets elected. And then they turn around and they select the corporate officers. They say who's the president, who's the vice president. You have to have a treasurer, or a treasurer and a secretary, because those people actually do work. The secretary actually records all the activities that go on at the meeting. So that's one of the first persons you actually hire. Treasurer has to file all kinds of financial statements. You name your bank. You do a banking resolution. Who's going to be the bank for this person? This person under the law, the corporation. Okay. You state when your fiscal year is. And you issue your shares. Okay. Now, the physical issuance of the shares generally comes later, but the issuance, the directive to issue them, will come at the organizational meeting. That we turn around and vote, we're going to sell. Let's say you have the authority, and just because you have the authority doesn't mean you're going to issue all those shares. Your articles of incorporation will say how many shares you can issue. Let's say it's 1,000 for Bob's Donuts. It's very unlikely that at the organizational meeting that we're going to issue 1,000 shares. Because generally you keep a lot back for reserve. Maybe you'll only issue 10. Okay? But that's a vote of the board of directors. They're going to determine how many they issue. There was a discussion, I know, in the textbook about corporate seals. Corporate seals used to be an item that when you sign the name, the president signed the name of the corporation, they literally press a seal in wax. That goes back to ancient times when kings would actually do that to show that they were the king and would seal something in wax to show who they were. That really doesn't exist much anymore. Matter of fact, they just generally put an SS after it. This corporate seal really is kind of meaningless anymore. But it used to happen, okay? Okay. Now, if I turn around as a director, we said before, remember you can be sued for this. If I'm using the corporation, we've talked about this briefly, for my own personal use, rather than for the benefit of the shareholders, I can be sued and pierced that corporate veil. I can be individually sued on that, even if I'm the sole shareholder. That liability goes away because the corporate format is a sham. Okay. Let's talk about what happens when you wind up. Okay. Every quarter, you produce financial statements as a corporation. And at the end of the year, you have to file with the Secretary of State and file with your shareholders an annual report. You say what the corporation did, how much it made, how much money it took in, how much it lost. You give the financial report and its activity report. That annual report has to be signed off on under Sarbanes-Oxley by the CEO or the president if you don't have one, or and the CFO or the treasurer if you don't have one. Okay? Those now have to be verified. If you do not tell the truth in those, which is what happened with companies like Enron, as CEO and CFO, not only are you liable by your shareholders, but you can go to jail because Sarbanes-Oxley provided for criminal penalties. Okay? Those annual reports are now touchy documents which tend to say less rather than more. Okay. Now, in addition to stock, a corporation can also borrow money by issuing bonds. It can go out there and float bonds and get money by selling those bonds and agree to pay them back over time. So it's not just stock which allows the corporation to raise money. Additionally, a corporation could also go to a bank, get a loan, if the board of directors so directs. Okay? Now, I have a perpetual corporation. And 6 generations from now, nobody's eating donuts anymore. There's a health kick out there. Nobody wants them. So Bob's Donuts really isn't doing well. Okay? So there's no real reason for the corporation to exist anymore. With a perpetual existence, it'll go on and on until such time as it's ended. How do you end it? The board of directors can vote to dissolve the corporation. That's how you end it. Now, you can dissolve in other ways. You can go through bankruptcy, okay? But assuming there's still money in the corporation from generations of selling donuts, you can dissolve the corporation. How do you do that? You put up a motion before the board of directors to do it. And where does the property of the corporation go to? The property in a dissolution goes out to the shareholders pursuant to the share that they own of the corporation. So if I own 10% of the shares, I get 10% of the value of the assets. They do not give, in a dissolution, the physical property. They won't say, hey, listen, I got a lawnmower that's worth, $10,000, and you own 10,000 shares, we'll cut the share, we'll give you a lawnmower. What they do is they will sell the lawnmower, and they give you money. In a dissolution, you liquidate. You actually turn around and dispose of all the property. Now, as a shareholder, I suppose you could buy it. But at the end of the day, they give you the money, not the item. Because remember, who owned the property? It wasn't the shareholders. Excuse me. It was the corporation itself. Now, one of the things you have to make sure you do when you dissolve is pay off all your creditors. Because the creditors are first in line. Shareholders only get what's left. So if your creditors of the corporation are owed money, they got to be paid first. Okay? Shareholders only get what's left over after paying all the fees and the debts and everything else. A simple majority vote of the shareholders, because it goes to the board of directors first, then they can put it out to shareholders. A simple majority vote of the shareholders is what's required to dissolve. If they vote to dissolve it, corporation goes away. Okay. When you do dissolve, you're going to have to notify the creditors as soon as that vote is taken. And then the dissolution takes place, and you'll get your money as a shareholder. Okay? Any questions? Next week we'll do limited liability companies and some other fun things. Okay?